The beef Wellington looked perfect when Aaron Patterson set it on the dining table that Saturday afternoon in July 2023. Steam rose from the golden pastry. The rich scent of mushrooms and beef filled her small home in Leongatha, Victoria. Don and Gail Patterson sat across from their daughter-in-law, smiling. Gail's sister Heather and her husband Ian completed the intimate gathering of five. Within 6 days, three of them would be dead. This was not food poisoning. This was not an accident. The 50-year-old mother of two had carefully planned their deaths using one of nature's most deadly weapons, death cap mushrooms. She purchased a food dehydrator months earlier. She researched locations where the lethal fungi grew wild. She lied about having cancer to gather them at her table. She served them individual portions while eating from a different colored plate herself. The crime shocked Australia and made headlines worldwide. A family lunch became a triple murder. A quiet dairy town became the center of a media circus. And a woman who seemed like a caring mother and daughter-in-law was revealed as a cold-blooded killer who used the most intimate setting, sharing a home-cooked meal, to destroy the lives of people who loved her. The death cap mushroom is responsible for 90% of all mushroom poisoning deaths worldwide. Half a cap can kill an adult. The poison cannot be cooked out, frozen out, or dried out. Symptoms appear 6 to 24 hours after eating, starting with vomiting and diarrhea that seems like food poisoning. Then the victim feels better for a day or two. The relief is false. During this quiet period, the toxin shreds the liver and kidneys from the inside. Death follows within a week. Aaron Patterson knew all of this when she prepared lunch that day. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave a comment. The next story might change your mind. Don't miss a single turn. Chapter 1. The Perfect Host. You would have liked Aaron Patterson if you met her at a school pickup or grocery store in Leongatha. She seemed like any other suburban mother in this dairy town of 6,000 people, 2 hours southeast of Melbourne. She had two children with her estranged husband Simon. She cooked elaborate meals. She took photos of her food and shared them online. She belonged to Facebook groups where women discussed true crime cases and exchanged recipes. The town itself felt safe and ordinary. Rolling green hills stretched in every direction. Dairy farms dotted the landscape. The South Gippsland Highway brought visitors through on their way to coastal beaches, but most barely slowed down. Leongatha had three schools, a cinema, and competing supermarkets. People knew each other. They attended the local Baptist church where Ian Wilkinson served as pastor. They trusted their neighbors. Aaron Patterson had lived here for years with Simon before their relationship soured. Money problems strained their marriage. Simon claimed single status on his tax returns while they were still married. Aaron felt betrayed. She complained to friends about Simon's parents taking his side in their disputes. She called them unsupportive. She sent angry messages about the family dynamics that frustrated her. But when she saw Don and Gail Patterson in public, she smiled. She hugged them. She played the role of loving daughter-in-law perfectly. The relationship between Aaron and Simon's parents had been complicated for months before the lunch. Don and Gail Patterson were devout Christians who attended Ian Wilkinson's Baptist church regularly. They believed in family loyalty and supporting their son through his marital troubles. When Simon and Aaron separated, the older couple found themselves caught between their love for their grandchildren and their desire to remain neutral in the divorce proceedings. Aaron borrowed money from Simon's family members over the years. She lent $400,000 to Simon's sister Anna to help her purchase a family home. The financial entanglements created additional tension when the marriage fell apart. Simon's parents wanted their son to receive his fair share of assets. Aaron wanted to protect her children's financial security. These conversations happened behind closed doors, but the stress showed in text messages and social media posts that would later become evidence. Don Patterson worked his entire life in the dairy industry that defined their region. He understood hard work and traditional values. Gail Patterson devoted herself to family and church activities. She baked cakes for gatherings. She sent caring text messages to family members asking about medical appointments and personal struggles. Both grandparents adored their two grandchildren and worried about how the family breakdown would affect them. Heather Wilkinson shared her sister's gentle nature and strong faith. She supported Gail through the family tensions and attended church events with her. Her husband Ian served as a respected community leader whose sermons drew regular congregations. The Wilkinsons had been married for decades and represented stability in a town where families sometimes struggled with modern pressures. The four victims lived quiet lives focused on faith, family, and community service. None of them could have imagined that their trust in Aaron Patterson would cost them their lives. Aaron Patterson's interest in mushroom foraging began during the COVID-19 lockdowns that kept Australians confined to their homes for months. She joined online groups dedicated to wild mushroom identification. She purchased field guides. She learned to recognize edible species that grew in the forests around Leongatha. She bought a food dehydrator in April 2023 to preserve her foraged finds. The hobby seemed innocent enough. Many Australians enjoy foraging for wild foods. The practice connects people to nature and provides fresh ingredients for cooking. Mushroom hunting requires knowledge and caution, but experienced foragers learn to identify safe species while avoiding toxic varieties. Death-capped mushrooms grow throughout Victoria during autumn months when weather becomes cool and damp. The government issues annual warnings about their presence. Local newspapers publish articles reminding readers about the dangers. These mushrooms often appear near oak trees in urban parks and suburban neighborhoods. They resemble some edible varieties, which leads to accidental poisonings among immigrant communities unfamiliar with local flora. Aaron Patterson's computer searches showed her visiting naturalist websites that tracked death-capped mushroom sightings. She viewed maps showing exact locations where other foragers had photographed the deadly fungi. She traveled to these areas in the weeks before the fatal lunch. Phone data placed her near Lock and Outram, two towns where death caps had been spotted and reported online. This was not casual mushroom hunting. This was targeted reconnaissance. The Victorian Department of Health had issued specific warnings about death cap mushrooms in April 2023, just 3 months before the lunch. The advisory stated that even small amounts could prove fatal. It warned that cooking, peeling, or drying could not remove the poison. It urged people to avoid touching suspected death caps and to keep them away from edible mushrooms. Aaron Patterson read these warnings. She understood the risks. She continued her research anyway. Her family relationships deteriorated throughout early 2023. Text messages revealed her growing anger toward Simon's parents. She complained that they refused to pressure their son to provide more child support. She resented their neutral stance in the custody disputes. She felt abandoned by people who had once welcomed her into their family. The Facebook messages she sent to friends revealed her true feelings about Dawn and Gail Patterson. She called them unsupportive. She used profanity to express her frustration. She complained that they prioritized their own comfort over their grandchildren's needs. These messages contradicted the loving relationship she displayed in public. But Aaron Patterson was skilled at managing appearances. She attended family gatherings when required. She allowed the grandparents to spend time with their grandchildren. She maintained polite conversations about everyday topics. She never let her anger show during face-to-face interactions. The deception was complete and calculated. 2 weeks before the fatal lunch, Aaron Patterson began reaching out to family members with invitations. She contacted Simon's parents directly. She included Heather and Ian Wilkinson in her plans. She suggested they gather to discuss her health concerns and how to handle them with the children present. The cancer lie began as a whisper and grew into a detailed deception. Aaron told Gail Patterson that she had discovered a lump that required testing. She described medical appointments that never happened. She invented MRI scans and needle biopsies. She created an entire fictional medical crisis to justify the lunch gathering. Gail Patterson responded with immediate concern and support. She texted caring messages asking about test results. She offered practical help with childcare and transportation. She suggested that the family should rally around Aaron during this difficult time. The older woman's kindness made the deception more cruel. Simon Patterson received an invitation to the lunch, but declined to attend. The relationship with his estranged wife had become too strained for comfortable social interactions. He felt uncomfortable spending time in her home, while custody and financial matters remained unresolved. His absence from the lunch likely saved his life. The children would not attend either. Aaron Patterson arranged for them to be elsewhere that Saturday. She told various people different explanations for their absence. She said they had other plans. She claimed they wanted to see a movie instead. She insisted the lunch was meant for adults only to discuss her medical situation. The real reason was simpler and more sinister. she could not risk poisoning her own children. On the morning of July 29, 2023, Erin Patterson began preparing the beef Wellington that would kill three people and destroy her own life. She followed a recipe from a popular Australian cookbook, modifying it to create individual portions instead of one large dish. This change was crucial to her plan. Individual servings allowed her to control exactly which portions contained the deadly mushrooms. She prepared the pastry. She seasoned the expensive beef. She created the mushroom mixture that would serve as both flavoring and murder weapon. Death cap mushrooms formed part of the filling, carefully measured and distributed to ensure fatal doses for her intended victims. The house smelled wonderful as the beef Wellington baked in her oven. The aroma of herbs and pastry filled the rooms. Everything appeared normal and welcoming when her guests arrived shortly after noon. Gail and Don Patterson brought an orange cake as their contribution to the meal. They seemed relaxed and happy to spend time with their daughter-in-law and grandchildren's mother. Heather and Ian Wilkinson arrived in good spirits, looking forward to a pleasant afternoon with family. None of them suspected they were walking into a carefully planned execution. Chapter 2: The Last Meal. The dining room felt warm and intimate when the five adults gathered around Erin Patterson's table that Saturday afternoon. Sunlight streamed through windows overlooking the quiet Leongatha Street. The beef Wellington portions sat on individual plates, perfectly presented with their golden pastry tops and savory aromas. Don and Gail Patterson admired the presentation. Heather and Ian Wilkinson complimented their hostess on the elaborate meal. Erin Patterson smiled and accepted their praise. She had spent hours preparing this lunch, but not in the way her guests imagined. The seating arrangement seemed casual, but every detail served her purpose. Don and Gail Patterson sat across from their daughter-in-law. Heather and Ian Wilkinson took chairs that gave them clear views of the food and each other. The atmosphere felt relaxed and familial, exactly what Erin Patterson wanted to project. She served the beef Wellington on gray plates for her four guests. Her own portion came on an orange-colored plate. Ian Wilkinson noticed this detail and would later testify about the color difference. At the time, it seemed like a minor household quirk. The hostess might have run short of matching dishes or chosen her favorite plate for herself. The truth was far more calculated. The different colored plate ensured that Erin Patterson could identify her safe portion throughout the meal. She could never accidentally consume the poisoned food intended for her victims. The conversation flowed easily during the first part of lunch. Don Patterson shared stories about his work in the dairy industry. Gail Patterson asked about the grandchildren and their school activities. Heather and Ian Wilkinson discussed church events and community news. Everyone seemed to enjoy the food and each other's company. Then Erin Patterson shifted the conversation to her health concerns. She began carefully, mentioning the lump she had discovered and the medical appointments she claimed to have attended. She described the uncertainty and fear that accompanied waiting for test results. She painted herself as a worried mother facing potential cancer while trying to protect her children from frightening news. The performance was masterful. Her voice carried just the right note of vulnerability. Her body language suggested someone struggling to maintain composure while sharing difficult information. She appeared to be seeking support from family members who cared about her well-being. Don and Gail Patterson responded with immediate sympathy. They asked questions about her doctors and treatment options. They offered practical assistance with childcare and household responsibilities. Their concerns seemed genuine and heartfelt. Ian Wilkinson listened with the compassion he brought to his pastoral duties. He had counseled many church members through health crises and family tragedies. His experience helping others face medical challenges made him particularly responsive to Erin Patterson's apparent distress. Heather Wilkinson echoed her husband's supportive words. She had watched her sister Gail struggle with various health issues over the years. She understood how medical uncertainties could affect entire families. Her gentle questions and encouraging comments revealed her caring nature. None of them realized they were listening to an elaborate lie designed to justify their presence at this fatal meal. As the conversation progressed, Erin Patterson provided more details about her fictional cancer diagnosis. She mentioned ovarian cancer specifically, a disease that particularly frightened women her age. She described the fear of leaving her children motherless if the diagnosis proved serious. She expressed gratitude for having family members who would help her through the challenging times ahead. The manipulation was sophisticated and cruel. She was using their love and concern to make them complicit in their own murders. When Ian Wilkinson suggested they pray for her recovery, Aaron Patterson readily agreed. The four visitors joined hands around the table as the pastor led them in asking for divine healing and strength during the difficult journey ahead. They prayed for the children who might lose their mother. They asked for wisdom for the doctors treating her condition. They sought comfort for the entire family facing this crisis. Aaron Patterson bowed her head and closed her eyes with the others. She participated in a prayer for her own fictional illness while the real poison was already working inside her guests' bodies. The beef Wellington portions disappeared quickly. Don and Gail Patterson praised the complex flavors and perfect pastry. Heather and Ian Wilkinson complimented the mushroom mixture that added richness to the meat. Everyone seemed to enjoy the elaborate meal that had required such careful preparation. Aaron Patterson ate her portion from the orange plate without incident. She engaged in conversation throughout the meal. She appeared to consume the same food as her guests, maintaining the illusion that they all shared the same risk of food poisoning if anything went wrong with the cooking. But her portion contained only safe, edible mushrooms. The death caps were reserved for the gray plates. After finishing the main course, Gail Patterson brought out the orange cake she had contributed to the meal. Everyone enjoyed generous slices while continuing their conversation about family matters and community news. The atmosphere remained warm and supportive throughout the afternoon. Aaron Patterson would later claim she became violently ill after eating this cake, vomiting so severely that it protected her from the mushroom poisoning that affected her guests. She suggested that her eating disorder and tendency to purge saved her life that day. The timing was remarkably convenient for someone who had prepared individual portions of poisoned food. The lunch concluded around mid-afternoon with expressions of gratitude and promises to stay in touch about Aaron Patterson's medical situation. Don and Gail Patterson hugged their daughter-in-law goodbye. Heather and Ian Wilkinson offered additional prayers and support. Everyone left feeling good about the family gathering and their ability to help during a difficult time. 24 hours later, all four visitors would be fighting for their lives in hospital emergency departments. The death cap toxin amatoxin works slowly and methodically. After consumption, it travels through the digestive system without immediately causing symptoms. The victim feels normal for several hours while the poison begins attacking liver cells at the molecular level. The toxin prevents cells from producing essential proteins, leading to organ failure that cannot be reversed once it begins. Initial symptoms typically appear 6 to 24 hours after eating the mushrooms. Victims experience severe abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea that resembles food poisoning or stomach flu. This phase can last 1 to 2 days before symptoms temporarily improve, creating false hope that recovery is beginning. The improvement phase is the cruelest part of death cap poisoning. Victims feel better and may believe they have overcome their illness. Family members celebrate the apparent recovery. Medical staff may reduce their concern about the patient's condition. Everyone hopes the worst has passed. But during this quiet period, the real damage accelerates. Liver cells die in massive numbers. Kidney function deteriorates. Blood chemistry becomes increasingly abnormal. The body's ability to process toxins and maintain basic functions collapses without obvious external symptoms. By the time symptoms return in the final phase, the damage is usually irreversible. Victims develop jaundice as their liver fails completely. They may experience confusion, seizures, or coma as toxins accumulate in their bloodstream. Multiple organ failure follows quickly, leading to death within days. The poison is particularly insidious because early treatment can sometimes prevent fatal outcomes, but patients and doctors often fail to recognize mushroom poisoning during the crucial first hours when intervention might succeed. Don and Gail Patterson began feeling unwell late Saturday night, about 12 hours after the lunch. The symptoms started gradually with stomach discomfort and mild nausea. They initially attributed their illness to overeating or perhaps a minor stomach bug. Many people experience occasional digestive upsets that resolve on their own. Heather and Ian Wilkinson developed similar symptoms around the same time. The four victims compared notes by phone, wondering if they had all caught the same virus or if something in the lunch had disagreed with them. Food poisoning seemed like the most logical explanation for their shared misery. None of them immediately suspected mushroom poisoning. Death cap fungi are not commonly known outside of foraging communities and medical professionals. the symptoms resembled many other illnesses that people encounter regularly. Even experienced doctors sometimes missed the diagnosis during the critical early hours. As Sunday progressed, all four victims felt worse instead of better. The vomiting and diarrhea intensified. Abdominal pain became severe. Family members began discussing whether medical attention was needed or if they should wait for the symptoms to resolve naturally. By Sunday evening, the decision was made for them. The symptoms had become too severe to manage at home. All four were transported to local hospitals for emergency treatment. The medical staff at Leongatha Hospital quickly recognized they were dealing with something more serious than typical food poisoning. The patient's symptoms were severe and persistent. Blood tests revealed abnormalities that suggested toxic exposure rather than viral or bacterial illness. But identifying the specific toxin would take precious time that the victims did not have. Dr. Chris Webster, who treated the patients at Leongatha Hospital, later testified that he suspected mushroom poisoning based on the delayed onset and severity of symptoms. He contacted poison control experts and began researching treatment protocols for potential amatoxin exposure. The race against time had begun, but Erin Patterson's victims were already losing. While her guests fought for their lives in hospital beds, Erin Patterson was busy covering her tracks. She disposed of the food dehydrator that contained traces of death cap mushrooms. She factory reset her phone multiple times to destroy digital evidence. She created false stories to explain her own mild illness and her knowledge of mushroom foraging. The performance continued even as the consequences became clear. When medical staff asked about the ingredients in Saturday's meal, Erin Patterson provided misleading information about mushroom sources. She claimed to have purchased them from supermarkets and Asian groceries, stories that investigators would later prove false. She visited the same hospital where her victims were fighting for their lives, seeking treatment for her own supposed symptoms. Medical staff found nothing wrong with her beyond mild dehydration. She discharged herself against medical advice after receiving minimal treatment. The contrast with her guests' conditions was stark and suspicious. Chapter 3: The Poison Truth. The phone calls started early Monday morning. Gail Patterson's sister called from the hospital with news that made Erin Patterson's stomach drop, though not from mushroom poisoning. All four lunch guests were seriously ill. The doctors suspected food poisoning, but the symptoms were worse than anyone expected. Blood tests showed liver damage that was already severe and getting worse by the hour. Erin Patterson expressed shock and concern. She offered to visit the hospital. She asked what she could do to help. The performance was flawless, but inside she must have known that her carefully planned murders were proceeding exactly as intended. Don and Gail Patterson, both 70 years old, were transferred from Leongatha Hospital to larger facilities in Melbourne with specialized intensive care units. Their conditions were critical. Heather Wilkinson, 66, was also transported to Melbourne for advanced treatment. Ian Wilkinson, 71, joined them in the fight for survival that would consume the next several weeks. The medical teams treating the four patients had experience with various poisoning cases, but death cap mushroom toxicity presented unique challenges. The amatoxin had already begun its devastating work on their liver cells. Standard treatments for other types of poisoning were ineffective against this particular toxin. The doctors were racing against a biological clock that had been ticking since Saturday afternoon. Dr. Mark Douglas from Monash Health's Emergency Department testified later about the progression of symptoms he observed. The patients arrived with severe gastrointestinal distress that gradually evolved into multi-organ failure. Their liver function tests showed rapid deterioration that indicated massive cellular damage. Blood chemistry panels revealed the catastrophic breakdown of normal bodily functions. The medical staff quickly suspected mushroom poisoning based on the delayed onset and severity of symptoms, but confirming the diagnosis required specialized testing that took precious time. They began aggressive supportive care while waiting for toxicology results that would prove their suspicions correct. Meanwhile, Erin Patterson was busy implementing her cover-up plan. On Monday morning, July 31st, she appeared at Leongatha Hospital claiming she had eaten the same meal and was experiencing symptoms. The medical staff examined her carefully, expecting to find evidence of the same toxic exposure that was killing her lunch guests. Instead, they found a woman in remarkably good health with no signs of amatoxin poisoning. Her vital signs were normal. her blood chemistry showed no abnormalities. Her liver function tests were perfect. She complained of nausea and mild abdominal discomfort, but physical examination revealed no objective evidence of illness. Dr. Chris Webster, who had treated her lunch guests the day before, found the contrast suspicious. For people who ate the same meal were dying of mushroom poisoning, while the person who prepared and served the food showed no symptoms whatsoever. The medical evidence did not support her claims of shared exposure. Erin Patterson insisted she felt unwell and demanded treatment. The staff provided supportive care and observed her for several hours. When they recommended admission for monitoring, she refused and discharged herself against medical advice. Her behavior struck several staff members as unusual for someone genuinely concerned about potential mushroom poisoning. The performance was necessary to maintain her cover story, but it was also dangerous. Every interaction with medical staff created potential witnesses who might later testify about her suspicious behavior and obvious good health. While playing the role of concerned victim at the hospital, Erin Patterson was simultaneously destroying evidence of her crimes. CCTV footage later obtained by police showed her arriving at the Kenwara transfer station on August 2, 2023, with a large object in her red MG SUV. She carried the item into the waste disposal area and left without the burden she had brought. The object was her food dehydrator, which still contained traces of death cap mushrooms from her preparation work. Disposing of this evidence was crucial to avoiding detection, but she had not counted on the waste facility's security cameras recording her visit. She also had not anticipated that staff members would recover the discarded dehydrator and turn it over to police when the investigation began. The timing of this disposal was particularly damning. She waited until her victims were hospitalized and their prognosis was becoming clear. She acted only when she knew the poisoning had been successful and investigation was likely to follow. Her phone records showed additional suspicious activity during these crucial days. She factory reset her Samsung phone multiple times, including once while it was already in police custody. The remote reset capability suggested sophisticated planning and technical knowledge that contradicted her portrayal as a simple suburban mother caught up in tragic circumstances. Each of these actions demonstrated consciousness of guilt and deliberate effort to avoid prosecution. On August 2nd, as her victims fought for their lives on mechanical ventilation in Melbourne hospitals, Erin Patterson received a visit from Child Protection Services at her home. This appointment had been scheduled before the lunch, but the timing created additional pressure to cover her tracks completely. She could not afford to have authorities discover evidence of mushroom foraging or food dehydration in her home. She told investigators later that she disposed of the dehydrator because she was afraid child protection workers would blame her for the poisoning and remove her children from her custody. She claimed panic motivated her actions rather than guilt about deliberately murdering four people. But panic does not explain the methodical destruction of evidence that occurred over several days. Someone truly panicked by accidental poisoning would have disclosed all relevant information to medical staff immediately, hoping to save the victims' lives. Someone covering up intentional murder would behave exactly as Erin Patterson did. The contrast between her actions and her claimed motivations revealed the calculated nature of her crimes. As the week progressed, the victims' conditions deteriorated despite the best efforts of Melbourne's top medical specialists. Don and Gail Patterson showed no improvement from supportive care and antitoxin treatments. Their liver function continued declining toward total failure. Heather Wilkinson followed the same devastating trajectory that had become familiar to doctors treating death cap poisoning. Ian Wilkinson received a liver transplant in a desperate attempt to save his life, but even this radical intervention could not guarantee survival. The amatoxin had damaged multiple organ systems beyond the liver alone. His recovery would require weeks of intensive care and rehabilitation, assuming he survived at all. The medical teams were fighting a losing battle against one of nature's most effective poisons, delivered in doses calculated to ensure fatal outcomes. Family members gathered at the hospitals to maintain vigils beside their dying relatives. Children and grandchildren took turns sitting with patients who could no longer respond to their presence. The grief and confusion were overwhelming as families watched their loved ones slip away from a poisoned meal that was supposed to be a pleasant social gathering. Erin Patterson visited the hospitals occasionally, maintaining her facade as a grieving daughter-in-law and friend. she expressed appropriate shock and sadness about the deteriorating conditions. She offered support to other family members and asked about treatment options. She continued playing her role, even as the evidence of her guilt accumulated in police files. The performance must have been exhausting, but she had no choice but to continue. Any break in character would have immediately focused suspicion on her involvement in the poisonings. On August 4, 2023, Heather Wilkinson died from multiple organ failure caused by amatoxin poisoning. Her death came after days of intensive medical intervention that could not reverse the toxin's effects on her liver and kidneys. She passed away surrounded by family members who still did not understand how she had been exposed to such a deadly poison. Later the same day, Gail Patterson joined her sister in death. The 70-year-old woman who had brought an orange cake to share at Saturday's lunch succumbed to the same toxic exposure that was claiming her family members one by one. Her husband Don remained on life support, but his condition continued deteriorating despite all medical efforts. Don Patterson died on August 5th, completing the triple murder that Erin Patterson had planned and executed with cold precision. Three people who had trusted her completely were now dead from the meal she had prepared in her home. Only Ian Wilkinson remained alive, fighting for survival in a hospital bed while machines sustained his basic bodily functions. The death toll from one family lunch had reached historic proportions for suburban Australia. Three elderly people were dead, and a fourth was fighting for his life because someone had deliberately poisoned their food with one of the world's deadliest natural toxins. The investigation that would eventually expose Erin Patterson's crimes was just beginning, but the damage she had inflicted on her family and community was already irreversible. The trust that binds families and communities together had been shattered by someone who used the most intimate act of care, preparing a home-cooked meal, to commit mass murder. Victoria Police launched a major investigation into the deaths immediately after the first fatalities were confirmed. Detective leading Senior Constable Stephen Eppingstall assembled a team of specialists to examine every aspect of the lunch gathering and its aftermath. The investigation would eventually involve forensic scientists, digital specialists, toxicologists, and dozens of other experts. The first priority was establishing the source and method of mushroom exposure. Investigators collected samples from Erin Patterson's home, including leftover food from the fatal meal. They analyzed the contents of her garbage bins and searched her property for evidence of mushroom foraging or food preparation. They also began examining her digital footprint, including internet searches, phone records, and social media activity. The electronic evidence would eventually reveal the extent of her planning and research in the months leading up to the murders. The investigation was complex and methodical, but it was also urgent. If Erin Patterson had murdered three people with poison mushrooms, she posed a continued threat to others. The police needed to gather sufficient evidence to support charges while ensuring public safety during the ongoing investigation. As detectives worked to build their case, Ian Wilkinson continued his fight for survival in a Melbourne hospital. His recovery would take months and require multiple surgeries, but he would eventually survive to testify about the events of July 29, 2023. His survival would prove crucial to securing justice for the three people who died that day. Chapter 4. The Web of Lies Unravels. The knock on Erin Patterson's door came at dawn on November 2, 2023, 3 months after the deadly lunch that had claimed three lives and shattered a small Victorian community. Victoria Police homicide detectives had spent those months carefully building a case that would expose the calculated nature of her crimes. They arrived with search warrants and enough evidence to charge her with three counts of murder and one count of attempted murder. The woman who answered the door bore little resemblance to the confident hostess who had served beef Wellington to her unsuspecting victims. Erin Patterson appeared haggard and nervous as investigators entered her Leongatha home for a thorough search that would last several hours. She knew this moment was inevitable, but she continued her performance of innocence even as her world collapsed around her. Detective Eppingstall had meticulously documented every aspect of her deception over the previous months. The digital forensics team had recovered deleted files from her computers and phones. The toxicology experts had confirmed death cap mushroom residue in her food dehydrator. The financial investigators had traced her purchase of foraging equipment and her visits to areas where deadly mushrooms grew wild. The evidence was overwhelming, but prosecutors would still need to prove intent and premeditation to secure murder convictions. They would need to demonstrate that Erin Patterson had deliberately planned these deaths, rather than accidentally poisoning her guests through careless foraging practices. The case that emerged from months of investigation revealed a woman who had researched her methods carefully and executed her plan with chilling precision. Erin Patterson's internet search history provided a roadmap of her murderous intentions. Investigators found that she had visited naturalist websites containing detailed information about death cap mushroom locations and toxicity. She had viewed photographs and GPS coordinates for specific areas where other foragers had documented deadly fungi sightings. Her searches were not those of a casual mushroom enthusiast learning about safe foraging practices. Instead, they showed someone specifically seeking information about the most toxic varieties and their geographic distribution. She had studied the effects of amatoxin poisoning and the time frame for symptom development. She knew exactly what would happen to anyone who consumed the mushrooms she planned to serve. The phone data was equally damning. Cell tower records placed her in Loch and Outram during April 2023, exactly where death cap mushrooms had been photographed and reported online. These trips occurred weeks before her fatal lunch, demonstrating advanced planning rather than spontaneous action. Her purchase history revealed additional evidence of premeditation. Bank records showed she had bought the food dehydrator in April 2023, months before the lunch. She had also purchased expensive cuts of beef for the Wellington recipe, ingredients that would not normally be served at a casual family gathering. Every element of the meal required advanced planning and preparation. The forensic evidence was particularly compelling. Scientists at the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine had analyzed samples from the recovered food dehydrator and found clear traces of death cap mushroom material. The concentrations were sufficient to prove that these deadly fungi had been processed in her kitchen equipment. They also analyzed samples of the leftover beef Wellington and found beta-aminitin, the specific toxin found in death cap mushrooms, in portions of the mushroom paste used as filling. The toxin was not distributed evenly throughout all the leftovers, supporting the theory that individual portions had been deliberately contaminated while others remained safe. Blood samples from the victims confirmed massive amatoxin exposure consistent with death cap mushroom consumption. Ian Wilkinson, the sole survivor, tested positive for both alpha-aminitin and beta-aminitin in concentrations that should have been fatal. His survival was due to prompt medical intervention and the liver transplant that gave his body time to eliminate the toxin. Erin Patterson's own blood samples, taken during her hospital visit on July 31st, showed no trace of amatoxin exposure whatsoever. This proved she had not consumed any of the poisoned food despite claiming to have eaten the same meal as her victims. The pattern of lies that emerged from the investigation was as systematic as it was cruel. Erin Patterson had lied about having cancer to justify the lunch invitation. Medical records showed no appointments, no tests, no treatments, and no diagnosis related to any form of cancer. She had invented the entire medical crisis to manipulate her victims into gathering at her home for their final meal. Text messages between her and Gail Patterson revealed the elaborate deception. Erin had described fictional needle biopsies and MRI scans in detail. She had created a timeline of imaginary medical appointments that corresponded with her lunch invitation. She had used Gail's genuine concern and compassion to ensure attendance at the fatal gathering. The cancer lie was particularly cruel because it exploited the victim's love and desire to provide support during difficult times. Don and Gail Patterson had responded to news of their daughter-in-law's supposed illness with immediate offers of help and emotional support. Heather and Ian Wilkinson had joined them in prayer for her recovery and offered their own assistance with childcare and household responsibilities. Their kindness and generosity had been used against them by someone who was already planning their deaths. She had lied about owning a food dehydrator when first questioned by police. Detective Eppingstall had specifically asked about kitchen equipment that might have been used to process mushrooms. Erin Patterson denied owning such a device despite having purchased it months earlier and used it to prepare the deadly meal. When investigators found the instruction manual for a dehydrator in her home, she claimed she had owned 1 year earlier and kept the paperwork out of habit. This explanation crumbled when bank records proved she had purchased the device in April 2023, just months before the murders. The CCTV footage of her disposing of the dehydrator at at the waste transfer station provided visual proof of her consciousness of guilt. She had waited until her victims were hospitalized and dying before eliminating the evidence that could connect her to the crime. She had lied about the source of mushrooms used in the beef Wellington. Initially, she told medical staff and police that she had purchased mushrooms from supermarkets and Asian groceries in the area. Health department investigators checked every store she mentioned and found that none of them sold death cap mushrooms or any products that could have caused amatoxin poisoning. When this explanation proved false, she changed her story to include some foraged mushrooms mixed with store-bought varieties. She claimed the wild mushrooms were accidentally included when she confused different containers in her pantry. This explanation became less credible as investigators documented her extensive research into death cap mushroom locations and her deliberate trips to areas where they grew. Her final version of events acknowledged that she had foraged mushrooms and used her dehydrator to process them, but maintained that their inclusion in the deadly meal was accidental. She claimed to be an experienced forager who would never deliberately include toxic varieties in food preparation. The evidence contradicted every aspect of this explanation. She had lied about her condition after the lunch and her reasons for visiting the hospital. Medical staff found no evidence that she had consumed amatoxin or suffered any symptoms of mushroom poisoning. Her vital signs and blood chemistry were completely normal throughout her hospital visit. Her claim that she had vomited violently after eating Gail's cake was not supported by any medical evidence or witness testimony. The purging episode that supposedly saved her life appeared to be another fiction designed to explain her survival while her guests died from the same meal. Her decision to discharge herself against medical advice was inconsistent with genuine concern about potential mushroom poisoning. Someone truly worried about toxic exposure would have remained in the hospital for monitoring and treatment. The accumulation of lies revealed a pattern of deliberate deception designed to cover up premeditated murder. The most damaging evidence came from her own children's testimony. Police interviewed both of Erin Patterson's children about the events surrounding the lunch and their mother's behavior in the following days. The interviews were conducted with appropriate safeguards for their age and emotional well-being, but their statements provided crucial insights into their mother's actions and state of mind. Both children confirmed that they had not been invited to the lunch and were elsewhere when their grandmother and great aunt and uncle were poisoned. This contradicted Erin Patterson's claims that the lunch was a family gathering that happened to exclude the children for various innocent reasons. Her son described finding his mother using her computer late at night in the days following the lunch, behavior that was unusual for their normal household routine. Phone records would later show this was when she was factory resetting her devices and deleting digital evidence of her crimes. Her daughter told police that their mother had never shown interest in mushroom foraging before 2023, contradicting Erin Patterson's claims to be an experienced forager who accidentally included toxic varieties in her cooking. The children's testimony painted a picture of someone who had developed new interests and behaviors specifically in preparation for the murders. Both children also confirmed that their mother had eaten from a different colored plate during family meals, supporting Ian Wilkinson's testimony about the orange plate that distinguished the hostess's safe portion from the poison gray plates used by her victims. The children's innocent observations provided some of the most powerful evidence against their mother's claims of accidental poisoning. Financial records revealed additional motives for the murders beyond personal animosity toward Simon Patterson's family. Erin Patterson faced significant financial pressures related to her separation and potential divorce proceedings. She had borrowed money from various family members and faced questions about repayment if assets were divided in divorce court. Insurance policies and inheritance patterns also created financial incentives for eliminating Simon's parents and other relatives who might have claims on family assets or influence over custody arrangements. While prosecutors did not rely solely on financial motives, they helped explain why someone might choose mass murder over less extreme solutions to family conflicts. The pattern of her behavior in the months leading up to the lunch showed systematic preparation rather than spontaneous action driven by temporary emotional distress. As the evidence mounted against her, Erin Patterson's legal team faced the challenge of defending someone whose lies had created an almost insurmountable burden of proof against her innocence. They would ultimately argue that she had made poor decisions after accidentally poisoning her guests, but that her actions were motivated by panic rather than guilt about deliberate murder. This defense strategy required the jury to believe that someone could accidentally research death cap mushroom locations, accidentally visit areas where they grew, accidentally harvest them, accidentally process them in a food dehydrator, accidentally include them in individual beef Wellington portions, and accidentally serve them only to guests while eating from a different plate herself. The accumulation of coincidences necessary to support an accidental poisoning theory strained credibility beyond the breaking point. By the time Aaron Patterson was formally charged with murder in November 2023, the evidence against her was overwhelming. The case would ultimately depend on the jury's willingness to believe her explanations for behavior that appeared consistent only with premeditated murder. The grieving families of her victims finally had someone to blame for their losses, but no amount of legal justice could restore the lives that had been taken by someone they had trusted completely. Chapter 5: Justice and Grief. The courtroom in Morwell was packed with journalists from around the world on July 7, 2025, as the jury foreman stood to deliver the verdicts that would conclude one of Australia's most watched murder trials. Aaron Patterson sat between two prison officers, her face expressionless as she waited to learn whether 12 strangers believed her claims of accidental poisoning or the prosecution's case for deliberate murder. The silence stretched for what felt like hours before the foreman spoke the words that would define the rest of her life. Guilty of murder. Three times he repeated those words, once for each victim. Then came the fourth verdict. Guilty of attempted murder for Ian Wilkinson, who had survived her poisoned meal through medical intervention and sheer determination. Aaron Patterson blinked rapidly, but showed no other emotion as the verdicts were read. She had gambled everything on her ability to convince a jury that the deaths of Don Patterson, Gail Patterson, and Heather Wilkinson were tragic accidents rather than calculated murders. The unanimous verdicts proved that 12 people who had heard every piece of evidence rejected her explanations completely. The 9-week trial had exposed every aspect of her deception and planning. More than 50 witnesses had testified about her behavior before, during, and after the fatal lunch. Expert witnesses had explained the effects of amatoxin poisoning and the impossibility of accidental exposure in the concentrations found in her victims. Digital forensic specialists had walked the jury through her internet searches and phone records that revealed systematic research into deadly mushroom locations and toxicity. But perhaps the most damaging testimony had come from Aaron Patterson herself during 8 days on the witness stand. Her attempts to explain away the evidence had only highlighted the implausibility of her claimed innocence. She had disputed the testimony of medical staff who treated her, contradicted her own children's statements, and offered explanations for her behavior that strained credibility. The jury had deliberated for 6.5 days before reaching their unanimous verdicts. Under Australian law, murder convictions require complete agreement among all 12 jurors. The time they spent considering the evidence demonstrated their careful attention to the defense arguments, but ultimately they found those arguments insufficient to create reasonable doubt about Aaron Patterson's guilt. Justice Christopher Beale would sentence her at a later hearing, but she now faced the possibility of life in prison for crimes that had shocked the nation and drawn international attention to a small dairy town in rural Victoria. The verdicts brought a measure of closure to families who had spent nearly 2 years seeking answers about why their loved ones had died from a meal that should have been a pleasant social gathering. But no legal outcome could restore the lives that had been taken or repair the trust that had been shattered by someone they had welcomed into their family. Ian Wilkinson, the sole survivor of the poisoning, had endured months of medical treatment and recovery to reach this moment. His testimony during the trial had been crucial to establishing what happened during the fatal lunch and exposing the lies Aaron Patterson had told about her interactions with the victims. At 71 years old, he had survived death cap mushroom poisoning that killed 3 other people who consumed the same meal. His recovery required a liver transplant and weeks in intensive care, followed by months of rehabilitation to regain his strength and health. The physical scars of his ordeal would remain for the rest of his life, but he had lived to see justice delivered for the friends and family members who had not been as fortunate. His wife Heather's death had devastated him personally, but his survival had been essential to securing convictions against the woman who had poisoned them all. Without his eyewitness testimony about the events of July 29, 2023, the prosecution case would have relied entirely on circumstantial evidence and expert analysis. The Wilkinson family asked for privacy after the verdicts were announced, but their statement through Victoria Police expressed gratitude for the investigation and prosecution that had brought Aaron Patterson to justice. They hoped the community could begin healing from the trauma that had consumed nearly 2 years of their lives. The Patterson family also declined to make public statements after the verdicts, but their relief was evident to observers in the courthouse. Don and Gail Patterson's surviving children had watched their parents die from poisoning administered by someone they had trusted and supported. The guilty verdicts validated their belief that the deaths were not accidents but deliberate murders committed by a family member they had never suspected of such capability. Simon Patterson, Aaron's estranged husband and the father of her children, faced the impossible task of explaining to his own kids that their mother was a convicted murderer who had killed their grandparents and great-aunt. His decision not to attend the fatal lunch had almost certainly saved his life, but it had also left him to deal with the aftermath of crimes that had destroyed multiple families. The children, now without their mother and facing the stigma of her crimes, would require years of counseling and support to process the trauma of learning that someone they loved had committed such terrible acts against their own family members. The broader community of Leongatha struggled to return to normal after 2 years of international media attention focused on their small town. Mayor John Shelley expressed relief that the trial was over and the community could begin moving forward. But he acknowledged that the town's reputation had been forever changed by the crimes committed within its borders. Local businesses had actually benefited from the influx of journalists and curious visitors during the investigation and trial. But residents were eager to return to anonymity and escape the notoriety that came with being known as the location of Australia's mushroom murders. The case had generated 4 dedicated podcasts that followed every day of testimony, making it one of the most closely monitored trials in Australian legal history. International media coverage had brought global attention to death cap mushroom poisoning and the dangers of foraging without expert knowledge. But for the people who knew the victims personally, the media circus had been a painful reminder of their losses and the senseless nature of the crimes that had taken their loved ones. The verdict also validated the tireless work of Victoria Police investigators who had spent months building the case against Aaron Patterson. Detective leading senior constable Stephen Eppingstall and his team had methodically gathered evidence from digital devices, forensic laboratories, medical facilities, and dozens of witnesses to construct an airtight case for premeditated murder. The investigation had been complicated by the unusual murder weapon and the defendant's attempts to destroy evidence. But the systematic approach to gathering and analyzing every piece of available proof had ultimately succeeded in securing justice for the victims. The forensic work done by the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine had been particularly crucial in proving that death cap mushrooms were present in the food dehydrator and in specific portions of the beef Wellington that had killed 3 people. Without this scientific evidence, prosecutors would have struggled to prove that the poisoning was deliberate rather than accidental. The case would likely influence future investigations of suspected poisoning cases and provide a template for building circumstantial evidence cases in situations where defendants attempt to destroy physical proof of their crimes. Legal experts noted that the case had hinged on the prosecution's ability to demonstrate a pattern of deliberate deception that was inconsistent with accidental poisoning. Aaron Patterson's lies about her cancer diagnosis, mushroom sources, dehydrator ownership, and hospital visit had created a web of contradictions that ultimately proved her guilt more effectively than any single piece of evidence. Her decision to testify in her own defense had been a calculated risk that ultimately backfired. While defendants have the right to tell their side of the story, her 8 days on the witness stand had allowed prosecutors to expose the inconsistencies in her explanations and highlight the implausibility of her claimed innocence. The case demonstrated the dangers of taking the witness stand when facing serious criminal charges, particularly when the defendant's version of events requires believing an extraordinary series of coincidences and accidents. As Aaron Patterson was led away to begin serving her sentence, the families of her victims faced the challenge of rebuilding their lives after nearly 2 years of legal proceedings and media scrutiny. The children she had orphaned would grow up knowing that their grandmother and great-aunt had died because someone they trusted had chosen to poison their food. The community of Leongatha would slowly fade from international headlines, but the scars left by these crimes would take years to heal. Trust is the foundation of family relationships and community bonds, and Aaron Patterson had weaponized that trust to commit murder on a scale that shocked even experienced homicide investigators. The case served as a reminder that evil can hide behind the most ordinary appearances, and that the people closest to us are sometimes capable of the most unthinkable acts. A suburban mother who seemed devoted to her children and community had planned and executed multiple murders using the most intimate setting possible: a home-cooked family meal. The beef Wellington that should have been an expression of love and hospitality became the delivery system for mass murder. The dining table that should have been a place of connection and sharing became a crime scene where three people consumed their final meal without knowing they were being poisoned by someone who smiled while serving their death. In the end, justice was served, but it came too late for Don Patterson, Gail Patterson, and Heather Wilkinson. They died believing they were loved by someone who had already decided to kill them. They spent their final conscious moments praying for the health and recovery of the person who had poisoned their food. The Mushroom Lunch murder case would be remembered as one of Australia's most shocking domestic crimes, a reminder that betrayal by those we trust most can be the cruelest form of violence. The verdicts brought legal closure, but the emotional wounds inflicted by Aaron Patterson's actions would last for generations in the families she had destroyed and the community she had traumatized. The grief of loss would eventually soften with time, but the questions about how someone could commit such acts against people who loved her would linger much longer. Some forms of evil defy explanation, leaving survivors to find meaning and healing in spite of senseless cruelty that can never truly be understood.